How do you build a high-performance team? That's the question that all leaders grapple with. The challenge in today's environment is that you're told to pull this off on a shoestring budget and that you have to exceed previous year's production. It's an impossible task. Here's how this show helps. Every week, we're going to feature executive and senior leaders from HR, IT, and sales, and they're going to share their best practices and playbooks so you can empower your managers to build great teams. We are Engaging Leadership, and now, here's the show.
Hello, everyone. My name is Chitong, or CT. I'm co-founder of Engage Rocket. We help school districts to use analytics to improve teacher retention, engagement, and student achievement outcomes. Welcome to the Engaging Leadership Show, where we talk about how to engage leaders and drive impact for your people. It's a great privilege today to be interviewing Dr. Linda Adamson, superintendent of the Pacific Grove Unified School District. Dr. Adamson, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much. It's my pleasure to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Pacific Grove Unified is one of the top in the state, and you've just taken over as the superintendent there, but you've been there for quite some time. So in your opinion, what is it that makes it special?
You're absolutely right. First of all, I want to be very upfront about the fact that I've been the superintendent at Pacific Grove Unified School District for around 6 months now. I started on November 3rd. I hit the road running and just embracing every possible opportunity and loving, just learning everything I can about this incredible district. It is definitely often referred to as a destination district. And I think as I have taken the time, particularly in my first 3 months, it continues right now as I do my listen and learn and meet with our community members, our staff, our students, our families, to learn as much as I can about what makes it a destination district. Why does Pacific Grove and do Pacific Grove students really repeatedly and historically do so well? I think what I've been able to find out and learn through my interactions and engagements with our community, there are a couple of things. I think the first one really has to do with Pacific Grove is a really small community. It's, you know, 15,000 residents. That really makes and allows for a very close-knit and tight community. It's a small district. We have a little under 18,000 students total, one high school, one middle school, two elementary schools. We have an adult education program, and we also have a community high school program. And essentially what that allows for is a lot more personalization. From what I have really been able to identify and see for myself is our staff are unbelievably dedicated. They have incredibly high standards. And that is set, that tone is set, I believe, from our site administrators. But for our teachers themselves, they raise the bar for themselves. So those high standards really ensure that they want to be able to give everything they possibly can to provide the best circumstances for our students. And then I just think a focus on holistic student development is another component that makes our district so special. We have a strong belief and a strong understanding that we want our students to feel a strong sense of belonging and connection at the schools. Our staff truly go out of their way to ensure that they are making those strong connections, building those relationships with the students that are under their care. I believe and I see our families have that same dedication. So there really is this component and this focus on collaboration between the school and the home, which is what I believe makes us so successful.
You're in a relatively tight-knit community of 15,000 residents. What I've learned is that leadership within schools does mean de facto or some kind of loose leadership within the community as well, because there's that element of engagement with the parents of the children that come to your schools. And even in the adult education sector, you do need to engage them. How do you think about that role that you play, both in terms of the formal leadership within the school district, as well as the slightly informal leadership that you have within the rest of this close-knit community?
That's a great question, Chitung. I see my role in that, in not only being able to continue it, but to also nurture it and really enrich that collaboration. A big part of that for me really comes down to my ability to build those same strong relationships with our families and with our staff and with our students. I think it really comes down to providing as many opportunities as possible to hear from, to listen to our community, and to hear from and listen to our staff. think it's one of the reasons it was such a priority for me coming in as a new superintendent to the district and also new to the community, to really engage our community, engage our staff, engage our students, and provide those opportunities for me to hear from them, but more importantly, in moving forward, to provide advisory councils, advisory committees where we can bring staff and families together to hear their voices, to provide opportunities for them to give input, but also to really be able to listen and engage with one another. And I think the more that we can do that, if we want that collaboration, if we want that unity between the home and the school and that strong connection, we have to continue to allow for those opportunities for that to take place. I think that's where advisory councils come in.
How do you think about designing your own day where you're spending some time listening to the schools, engaging the schools and leadership within the schools, engaging the community, the homes and the parents, and also managing and engaging with the school board, ensuring that they are kept apprised and are clear about the direction that is being driven? How do you think about spreading out your time between these constituents?
Chi Chung, I think that you've just hit on the balance that is so needed in the role of a superintendent. I spend a lot of time thinking about how I spend my time. I'd like to believe that, yes, I try to have a good amount of balance. Some days are definitely, you know, better and easier than others. It absolutely comes down to ensuring that I am engaging, that I am at the school site. A good deal of my week, I spend scheduling time to walk schools, campuses with our principals, to get into classrooms, to engage with our students, engage with our staff, to really get a sense of the instruction that's happening. I want to be able to have that opportunity to understand what some of the challenges are that they're facing, but also really learn about what are they excited about, what makes learning exciting for them. So I think that's where the site piece of it comes, our staff and our students. And so that I make a priority. If you look at my calendar, that is something I work with my assistant on in making sure we're scheduling that time. And that way I'm able to also talk firsthand to what I'm seeing in the classrooms, whether it's at a board meeting, whether it's engaging with a community member, or in a parent-teacher meeting where I'm addressing and answering questions about a concern a parent may have. For families, what I have done in my first 6 months is be very intentional about scheduling one-on-one meetings with community members, with parents. But in addition to that, I have also been able to work with our district site level staff to work on community input sessions. As we're creating our LCAP right now, that's our three-year plan for our district. A strong component of that is community engagement. And so we have had multiple opportunities for our community to be able to come in, for us to be able to hear from them, get input on, you know, what they feel our strengths are as a district and what areas we need to focus on, because that's ultimately going to help us develop our goals for our LCAP. So having those opportunities where our community members, our parents can engage with one another, but also engage with our district and site level staff is important. As far as our board goes, definitely as a superintendent, a good 80% of your time needs to be spent in ensuring that, yes, you're keeping them updated as the governance body that ultimately sets the tone and helps set direction and helps us really drive and determine policy. Right? They need to be as informed and up to date as possible. And as superintendent, that's one of my biggest roles, being sure we're engaging our community, engaging and involving our students. And so that is a regular part of my day in interacting with them, whether it's in my one-on-one meetings, weekly updates, our own governance sessions that we work together on, giving them the tools that they need to be successful in their roles. And ultimately, our board meetings, that happens twice a month, but it can't just be during those times that they're being brought up to date. So that ongoing interaction with them is a critical piece. So really, when I look at it, all those different facets and components, it's about bringing everyone together. Yes, having that balance, but building strong relationships with each member of our community, regardless of what role they play, because that's ultimately what helps us stay successful.
You've been in education with various roles, teacher, principal, director, and so on, and now superintendent. And over all these years, when you think back to the time when you first entered education, that role that you had to play compared to what you're doing today is vastly different. What made you want to take on this role as a superintendent? Because it's so different from why you got into education in the first place.
It really is, Chi Tung, in many ways, but in other ways, not so much. When I think back to what got me into teaching to begin with, I loved that ability to be able to bring and shine a light on one individual student, if it was even just one, that ability to be able to have an impact in the students' lives that I was fortunate enough to be involved in. It was a little bit of a superpower. My younger sister still talks to me today about how she remembers me building my own little classroom in our living room and teaching her everything I knew. She says it to me today. I was able to explain things to her like none of her teachers could. So I think I knew from a young age that's what I was destined to do. I knew when I left the classroom and stepped into the principal role, even though I didn't think it was for me at the time, I was encouraged to do so by many of my own mentors and leaders who saw that in me. I knew the moment I became a principal and realized the larger impact that I was now able to have. That's what really drove me and allowed me to continue to nurture that position itself. And I loved it all the way up to the point when I was tapped again to really think about leadership at the district level. As a former assistant superintendent, that truly allowed me to really, you know, get a sense of what the role of superintendent involves. I loved that role. I did that for 3 years and knew that my next step was going to be superintendent. The ability that you have in this position to truly be able to impact culture and really be able to change and drive culture. For me, everything I do, it comes down to creating that sense of belonging for every single student in the district that I serve, a sense of belonging that they feel that they know, that they have adults at their school site who care about them, who they know they can turn to, who they know are going to be there for them no matter what happens in their lives. I'm a firm believer that no significant learning can happen without first the creation of a significant relationship. And the way that you do that is by building those strong bonds and those connections. And in my role, I'm truly able to really impact that the development of that culture at our school sites where we can ensure that, yes, our students are being identified with, being connected to minimum of one adult at their school sites who can truly make a difference in their lives. Because that's truly what it comes down to. For many students, it's one adult in their life that they know truly believes in them, that they can, you know, really excel and do great things. So I think that's the part that I just absolutely love, the fact that I really be able to change the trajectory in one student's life, one student. But ultimately, you tend to do it with more. That's the part I love about being a superintendent.
That is so powerful. No significant learning happens without a significant relationship. There are all of these massively online courses that have sprung up over the years, and their completion rates are so much lower than what you would see in actual in-person classes. I think we might touch on this later as well, like with COVID and shifting of learning away from the classroom and into the homes through video calls as a medium. That significantly changed the learning environment as well. And I'm reflecting on this. That's probably true even after you become an adult. Like, it's not any different. The way that you learn, the way that you get coached or mentored happens a lot better if you have a strong relationship with who you're learning from. And that's a small segue to thinking about your own journey as a leader, because you mentioned when you took on the principalship, you were a little bit reluctant. Over time, you must have had some kind of support that helped you bloom as a leader along every step of that journey. How did you learn to be a leader?
I've had mentors and coaches who have been beside me every step of the way. When I was in the classroom and as a teacher, I thought this was it. I was born to do this. I couldn't think of myself doing anything else. And I did. I was very reluctant, is the perfect word, when I was tapped on the shoulder to really consider a principal position. In fact, the first time I was asked, I turned it down. I was absolutely, you know, adamant that this was not for me. I needed to be in the classroom. And so that same coach, you know, really had to coax me further. I had to really be able to, you know, think about it. And when I did, I made the decision knowing if I hate it, I can always come back to teaching. And so that's really what allowed me to step into that realm. I am a firm believer in coaching and mentoring. Every leader, every teacher really should have someone that they look up to, that they respect, who is in a role that they ultimately could possibly see themselves in down the line, but who knows them, who can give you feedback, who can allow you to grow. I can give you constructive criticism, because sometimes that's what it takes, but ultimately who is going to be able to do it in such a way that it brings out the absolute best to allow you to shine. Even the principals that I coach today in my current role, I talk to them all the time about the importance of identifying not just one, I'd say anywhere from 3 to 4 mentors and coaches in their lives that they can turn to when things get tough, when they are seeking advice, whether it's about just a challenging situation that they're dealing with in their current situation, or you're really thinking about what their long-term career goals are. I think so much needed for someone who's out of your immediate situation, who can look at things objectively and to be able to give you some of that guidance and direction that we all need in our lives. I myself have currently from 5 to 7 former superintendents. 2 of them actually are still serving as superintendents who I consider as individuals and leaders that I respect unbelievably, that I've worked with for many years in my life, who I know I can turn to, who are going to, you know, be honest with me when I need that, but can also give me advice, because the superintendency, it's a lonely position. I think leadership in general can be very lonely. If you're the leader of a school site as a principal, it's really you right at the top. There are not many people who work with you in your immediate team that you're able to really talk to about some of the challenging things you're going through. So it truly is so important to reach out to your outside networks, you know, to that team of colleagues that you can truly rely on and trust. I currently have an unbelievable coach who, in fact, she just spent 3 days with me last week. She stayed up here in Pacific Grove and we got to visit all of the school sites. I got to introduce her to my immediate cabinet team. And we did a little bit of a leadership afternoon on Friday afternoon where we, you know, looked at different articles and really talked about what it means to be a leader. And so, yes, I think in nurturing that, in coaching, you know, those that I'm serving, I need a model for them, that I'm not just telling them the importance of having a coach. I'm showing how it's really helped me in my own career. It's been people along the way who've helped me move into those next positions.
Wow. It's been a great conversation so far. Make sure you join the HR Impact Community, where we gather a community of HR leaders just like you. This is a space where top people leaders share actionable insights and practical playbooks. Sign up today as a member for the community. Get updates on the latest HR resources and exclusive event invites. You can join the community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. And now, back to the show.
Taking a step back, when we look at coaching and mentoring programs in the corporate world, sometimes these can be very programmatic, systematically matching mentors with individuals in the organization. But from what I'm hearing from you, and in my own personal experience as well, it seems like this is a little bit more of an organic process where, as an individual, it's up to you to seek out people that you have chemistry with, people that you respect, and they need to see something in you as well for them to want to invest that time and to share their advice and experiences. What have you found in terms of your journey to find these 5 to 7 mentors and even a coach that you have? And how would you recommend maybe more junior leaders within education to seek these out?
Identifying traits in other leaders that you would like to see and you believe are important to you as a leader. And that's what I did for myself. And that's the recommendation that I give to others that I coach. You really need to identify and know what are the 4 to 5 core traits, core values that you know that you want either be able to reach for or you believe are what you want to be in a leader for yourself, but also what is the reason that you admire other leaders. I encourage leaders to really step out of their comfort zone and reach out to those individuals. Number one, there's no more better compliment than having another leader reach out to you to say, look, you're the kind of leader they would want to be someday. And would you be willing to serve as a coach for them? I think that starts on a really positive note right there. But ultimately, it's really showing incentive. It's showing an interest from the individual that they're out there seeking to surround themselves with others who, number one, they want to aspire to be like, but also others who they respect and ultimately want to follow in their footsteps. That piece is really important. It truly has to be someone you can resonate with, who connects with you, but who is going to be able to bring out the best in you as well. It can't just be someone who's going to point out the great things you're doing, right? I think as a leader, you need to be vulnerable. You've got to be able to put yourself on the line a little to know that for me to get better, I've got to be open, I've got to be reflective, be willing to take those slightly harder hits, but realize that it's all for the good and it's going to ultimately make you be a better leader yourself.
Do you think it matters whether this person is within your organization, where they might have better context, better understanding of the different stakeholders and players involved? Or do you feel like it might be better for this person to be outside the organization where they're less encumbered by that insider knowledge and able to provide that outsider perspective? And also there's a greater degree of psychological safety with someone who's not invested in any particular outcome within the organization.
I actually think it's critical to have someone from outside the organization. There's a more of a level of sort of safety and a sense that, yes, you can share things a little bit more objectively as well. I always tell leaders there's no such thing as a stupid question. You need to build that safety harness a little bit that is indeed outside of the organization to know that way you can really be able to talk about that you can trust, that really are not going to be things that are going to impact you within your actual position itself. So definitely important to be outside of the organization, in my opinion.
What has been your greatest leadership challenge and how did you address it?
I think ultimately, for sure, if you ask this question to anyone in education, the answer is going to be greatest challenge was COVID, by far, by none. The day March 13th for us as educators will live in infamy. That was the day that districts around the nation for us made that decision to go ahead and close schools and move into some form of an online approach to learning. There was no playbook for that. Typically in education, things move at a very slow pace. If you want to bring around any kind of a change to instruction, it can take anywhere from 3 to 5 years for that new strategy to be implemented. During that time of COVID in 2020, we had every single one of our teachers up online using technology in a way that they had never used before. Very few people had even heard of Zoom at the time. And now we were, you know, really using it to bring instruction into every single student's living room. It was an unbelievable challenge, but it made us realize what we were able to accomplish. When we look back at what we were able to accomplish, it really opened our eyes for educators on how to maybe go about doing things differently. Yes, we were forced to really come up with solutions that we would never have pushed in prior years. Ultimately, now the advantage we have of that is it's really changed how we think about instruction. It's changed how we make instruction and contents and materials available. It's changed the way teachers really think about how to be a little bit more innovative and make learning more hands-on and more, you know, relative to the students that they're teaching. My hope is that we continue to take those lessons and apply them to our future years as we continue to try to be as creative and innovative as possible as we can.
Were you assistant super of educational services at that time?
I was assistant superintendent of educational services. So for me, it really was overseeing everything related to instruction and how we were delivering that content to our students and our families.
You're in the hot seat.
Yes, indeed.
Wow. What were some of the specific things that you really grappled with? And how did you seek counsel? How did you use your judgment to come up with a solution?
I think it really had to do with using the team around me at the time. I was fortunate to really be surrounded with some incredible, you know, directors who were, you know, very much hands-on, and our teachers on special assignment who worked at the district level at the time. They were a huge resource for our teachers to be able to provide them with tools, with sample lessons. In fact, they actually took a good 2 weeks and designed a variety of different lessons and templates that they would be able to push out to all of our teachers that helped them as they were, you know, needing to deliver their lesson plans in an online method. So I think just really leaning to the experts that we had at our, you know, disposal. Obviously, we had an unbelievable team who came together on a regular basis. The communication was critical during that time, but ultimately to make sure that our teachers knew that they were not alone, that they had these experts available to them for whatever questions they had with whatever challenges they were facing. Our TOSAs and our directors were there to be very much hands-on to provide that information they needed. But I think in anything, as we were making any kinds of decisions, nothing was done in isolation during that time. It was us at a district level. We were constantly meeting many times in the same room, if it was online or in person, coming together to be sure that we were not making rash decisions. We took the time that we could. It was as intentional and deliberate as possible before we put that material out to our teachers. We offered even regular weekly times for our teachers to come online, to come on Zoom, to really allow chances for them to collaborate with one another, to ask questions, because that is what was so needed with so many of our teachers, especially in those first few months, still working from home before we came back into the classrooms. That ability for everyone to know they were not alone, to see faces, to be able to have conversations and ask questions and give support was so important. That wasn't just at the district level. We were being sure that we were reaching out to other district leaders as well to be sure we had that network of collaboration. That was a critical piece.
Was there anything that when you look back now, 3-4 years down the line, and anything that you feel you would have decided differently, what would that be if there was anything?
I think it's so easy to think about, oh, what we could have done differently in retrospect. But honestly, I don't know if there was anything we would have done differently to that approach. What we did in the time, given this was, you know, like nothing else we'd ever experienced, I truly am proud of how quickly we were able to respond and to be able to put together a system and resources to equip our teachers with that ability to be able to do what they needed to do in unprecedented times. The only piece I would have wished that we'd had was more of a system in place where we were able to pivot quickly to some form of an online learning modem. We had to create that in a very short amount of time, and it wasn't ideal right away. It took us weeks and months to perfect it. But once we had a system in place that now, to this day, if we were to ever face something similar, it would be a simple pivot to, okay, we're moving everything back to online and we have those systems in place now. I guess that would have been the only thing I would have done differently, is to really be able to anticipate something along those lines and have the systems in place to be able to switch so quickly.
That's a really good point. As a leader, you can't predict everything. It's impossible to have perfect foresight into the future. I'm from the military, so even in military, you hope to have every single contingency plan in the world ironed out, but it's just impossible. And to invest in the preparation for every single contingency is also extremely resource intensive. I definitely wouldn't be myself up over not having that system in place if I were you. I want to look now at overall leadership quality. And in your experience, when you've seen strong leaders and not so strong leaders, what kind of difference in impact does that have on student outcomes, on engagement outcomes with the homes and the parents and community? Have you seen any kind of differences that is pinpointable?
Absolutely. I'm a firm believer that the leader truly does drive direction and drives the ability, drives outcomes, truly is able to determine whether you're going to be a successful organization or whether they're going to be challenges and struggles. You are specifically, what are some of those traits as far as successful leaders? It really comes down, in my belief and what I've observed myself, is very systems minded, the ability to be able to identify and create systems to achieve the outcomes that you're looking for. The mark of a good leader is being able to identify where the systems are working well, but more importantly, where there is change that's needed, and to have a good sense of what those changes are, to be able to identify them pretty quickly and to be able to start moving forward with them. A strong leader, you've got to be able to develop quickly the trust from those that you're leading. That's an important piece, and that takes time. You need to spend those first few months, the first few years even, in building that trust and those relationships with those you lead, because if you're wanting to bring people along, people don't do it with leaders that they don't trust. Being able to be vulnerable initially in the beginning as well, to really identify and show that this is a commitment for you, and you do that by starting to show the people that you're leading that you are here for the long term, that you care, that their trust is important to you. I'm going to go out and start building those relationships early on, showing their commitment, showing the care that they have for the people within the organization. as a superintendent, I think it's equally important that care is being extended to the students that you're serving and the families that you're serving. This is one of the most important priorities for you in your current position. When we can do that along with then, yes, identifying what the systems are that need to be put into place that'll allow us to go from good to great. But those are essentially the two critical elements of a successful superintendent.
It aligns very closely to how you live out your own leadership, being that very collaborative, listening approach to the community and to your stakeholders, as well as taking time to build that trust with them. We live in California, and in a time where technology is racing so quickly, what role does technology, data, and AI play in your leadership?
Oh gosh, it's a big role. In education, the one that comes to mind of most importance to me is how we use technology, how we use data to drive instruction. When I met with my principals for the first time coming into this role, one of the first things I asked them was, what are the areas of strength for your areas for your curriculum and instruction? Where are your students achieving? And the only way you can know that as a site leader is if you have the data available to you, that you are progress monitoring your students. You've got last year's data, but now you've also got your assessment data from your first quarter, your second, your third, your as principals, you're taking time, you're looking, analyzing that data, you're having conversations with your teachers about that data, that you're using it to identify where is your students who are needing improvement, who are needing support and intervention, and not waiting till the end of the year to go ahead and provide resources. It's critical from that first week that teachers are coming together at their grade levels, in their content areas, that they're looking at where their students are achieving, but most importantly, where there are areas needed for improvement, so that we as educators, our role is to be able to intervene early, provide the resources and intervention that our students need in order for them to make the growth, close the gaps, to ultimately excel. Our role as educators is all about removing barriers for every one of our students to ensure they have equitable access to the instruction that is there for them. And we do that through the addition of interventions and supports and resources. The only way we can do that is by progress monitoring throughout the year. So as a principal, it's critical. As a teacher, it's critical. As a superintendent, it's critical for me to be looking at, number one, the overarching data, but also still being able to drill down to our individual sites, to our grade levels, to our content areas, to be able to identify and work with our principals on ensuring that we have the programs in place and the resources in place to help those students succeed.
The immediacy and the specificity of the data that you're dealing with is so critical to how you make decisions, to how you course correct along the way, rather than waiting to the end of the school year before you make any changes. By that time, the kids have just gone up one grade already. You missed a lot of opportunities along the way. It's so exciting to hear that's something that you embrace and are actively encouraging your team to look into as well. Your students are definitely in good hands. If you have one piece of advice to anyone in education thinking about a leadership role and or thinking about mentoring a leader, what would that be?
I would go with, you follow your instincts, you seek for and you follow your true north. And I think that if you are going to be an authentic leader, an authentic educator, you can't do it with becoming someone other than who you are within your own self. I think we can pull out and be a better version of who we are. But ultimately, we all went into education for the same reason. You went in to make a difference and to make a difference in the lives of students, to keep that at the forefront, no matter what position you're seeking. No matter what role, whatever seat you're sitting in, whether you're in the classroom, whether you're a site leader, a district leader, be mindful of what originally brought you into this career. And that is that you can and can continue to make a difference in no matter what role you are, as long as I think you're staying true to yourself, authentic, and really allowing yourself to share your gifts with others. If you're mentoring others, be open, be vulnerable about your own experiences, share them openly and widely. If you're seeking mentorship, ask a lot of questions. Spend time around the people that you want to be more like, because I think the more you can learn from them directly, the more it's going to ultimately help shape who you become as an impactful and an inspirational leader ultimately.
That's wonderful advice, Linda. Thank you so much for sharing that and for sharing your own personal North Star in your journey. And I'm inspired by how much that focuses on the students and making a difference in their lives. It's been such a pleasure to have you speaking with me today. I hope everyone who's been listening has taken away a lot of little nuggets of leadership gems that you have dropped today. Head over to www.ngo/education to access this interview and the show notes, as well as other interviews that we've done with superintendents across the United States. Once again, signing off, my name is CT or Chitong. Thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Engaging Leadership. We hope you liked the conversation. Don't forget to continue supporting us by joining the HR Impact community. You can find our community at www.engagerocket.co/HR Impact. Tune in next time where we'll have another leader joining us and sharing with us the game-changing insights that help them build high-performing teams.